Welcome to Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie, joined by Darren, and we bring you the news, reviews and recommendations of the latest theatre.
We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, and the next hot ticks.
Well, Merry Christmas, Natalie.
Happy Christmas, darling. Happy Christmas and all the good cheer to you.
And Merry Christmas to all our wonderful listeners. I hope you're having a wonderful festive time.
Yes. Hope that all the turkey and trimmings are ready, and if you're vegan or vegetarian, hope that that you're excited for the festive cheer, and love to all those for whom Christmas is a difficult time of year. Oh my God, that rhymed.
It did, didn't it? Look at you. You're a poet and you didn't know it.
It's all this Shakespeare I've been watching this year, really.
Oh dear. Or the tragic Shakespeare, or the good Shakespeare.
Well, the Shakespeare and all the plays about Shakespeare and about directing Shakespeare. There's been a lot, actually, all in the last 2 months.
Oh, fantastic. Just to go back a bit, we said about, you know, turkey and stuff. Have you ever tried the vegan turkey roast?
Yeah, I like the fact that you round that off with a laugh, because you know that that's not my thing. I could never deal with the substitute bacon or any of that. And yeah, is it nice, Darren?
No, it's not nice at all. And I had it 1 year, and it is generally horrific. So now I do my own stuff. The thing is, it is getting better and better, and some people's tastes obviously vary, so they're not obviously like mine. Mm. I just think that some of the meat substitutes...
Don't have your delicate palate.
Very delicate palate. Some of the meat substitutes aren't quite what they could be. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love a good, you know, vegan, vegetarian burger.
Piece of meat.
But it's the, like you said, the fake bacon, like the fake turkey. No, thank you. I just do a nice nut roast.
Yeah, I was going to say, you strike me as more of a nut roast kind of man.
A nice, moist nut roast. Don't like a dry one.
Oh, that word. when you talk about the word moist, it reminds me of... there's a sketch on the Jack Whitehall and his father Christmas special where his dad makes a joke about the moist turkey every year. And does mummy need a good stuffing?
Oh.
There you go. Oh. There's the joke. You don't need to watch it now. It's just very, very funny. I was watching that the other day.
Matron.
Indeed. I think that's for me, that was instead of going to a pantomime this year.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Oh, yes, it was. Definitely. Oh, so I went to see, quite a while back now, actually, but The Little Big Things at Soho Place. Let's just talk about the beauty of that theatre once more. I love this theatre. It's beautiful. It's purpose-built, particularly for this show, which is all about resilience and against all odds coming through, and disability, and this theatre being a newly built theatre. The access for those people with disabilities or in wheelchairs is incredible in comparison to some of, you know, the older theatres who have had to adapt themselves in order to be able to have wheelchair users, etc. So this is a beautiful, and it's just beautiful as well, the sort of copper tones and the blues and the sort of the stars on the sky. It's gorgeous arena to be coming into. You haven't seen The Little Big Things, have you?
No, I haven't yet. No, I will see it. I mean, it's on to the 2nd of March, so I've got plenty of time. But saying that, when you say you've got plenty of time, it soon creeps around. And you're like, oh my gosh.
I know.
You know, like I'm seeing a show which closes on Saturday or Friday night because, again, it's been on for a while. And I just forgot all about it. It's like, oh dear. Okay. Yeah. So I will try and see it, definitely.
That's what happens. I think sometimes that's what happens with some of these huge shows as well. Like, I never got to see that Bob Marley the musical, and I was desperate to see that from the outset, and then all of a sudden it was not all of a sudden, just time crept up and the show closed, the prices went through the roof in that last week. I couldn't make it, and that was it, and I was like, damn, I never got to see it. But yeah, so this is until March the 2nd, and as we say, you have got time, but definitely worth booking a ticket now and knowing that you've got it locked down and in the diary. But so this is the world premiere. It's a new musical, and it's based on the memoirs of Henry Fraser. So it is a true story, and it's based on his best-selling book. The book then that goes with this is written by Joe White. He wrote Blackout Songs at Hampstead Theatre. Do you remember that I was absolutely raving about earlier on in the year? I think that was, I can't remember if that was autumn or springtime. It's all rolling into one now at the end of the year. But I thought the writing of Blackout Songs was so incredible and heartfelt. And here he goes again, pulling together this show, directed by Luke Shepherd and Juliet Fame. He writes in the programme, Henry Fraser, "It was July the 18th, 2009, when everything in my life changed." So Henry was aged 18. He was at Dulwich College, and he was a fantastic sportsman. He was in sort of like the academy rugby club. He was marked to be an absolute rugby star. And then in a freak accident on a holiday that he was not quite going to go on, and then all of a sudden ended up on, as you do as a teenager, lastminute.com. A freak accident swimming in the sea. He hit something and then he crushed his spinal cord and was left paralysed from the shoulders down. Henry is actually a very good friend of one of my colleagues. And so I took a school group to go and see the production with my colleagues. So it was a bunch of drama students and sports students and sick formers, and we had a fantastic time. And this musical is incredibly uplifting. It's life affirming, it's entertaining, it's heart-wrenching, it's a tearjerker, but there's beautiful comedic moments in there as well. And it just shows that through extraordinary courage and strength of will that you can pull through and succeed. And Henry's actually forged an incredibly successful career as a motivational speaker, as an artist, he paints with his mouth, and as an author of this book, which he wrote in 2017. And then this musical has come about, and he's obviously been incredibly involved in the whole creative process with the team and how they brought it to the stage and the casting and all these things. And it's just so upbeat, and it's about hope, positivity, and love, and a show that if you love Come From Away, then you will love this. It's got that kind of lilt, and, you know, it's modern, it's contemporary. It's about humanity and resilience and people pulling together. And so it is incredibly uplifting. So if you're getting the January blues, go and watch this, because it puts your life potentially, I mean, I'm not speaking for everyone, but it puts things in perspective, and it shows you that you can. You can. And with the right people around you and support, you will, you know. Beautiful. You should definitely see it, Darren.
It sounds amazing. I mean, I've read a lot of the reviews that have come up, and I know people that have personally seen it, and they've all loved it. And it's the kind of, like, feel-good story that we need in our lives right now, I think. And you're right, it's that whole thing, tragedy happens and you have a choice, cause or the effect of your life, as they say.
Absolutely, yeah. And this and it's exactly that. And he goes through these sort of sliding door moments, almost, of do I carry on as the victim, or do I do something? And we see two different actors. So we see Ed Larkin and Johnny Amies, and they play him as the young him, i.e. pre-disability, and the adult him in a wheelchair. And it's this constant battle and struggle between him constantly remembering, but I was this person, this is who I am, this is who I am now. And that is it's just, it's kind of heart-wrenching, but also uplifting. It's a bit of a paradox. But yeah, beautiful. Lindsay Hateley plays the mum, and she has a glorious song. It's the song just as she arrives at the hospital. And this song, oh my God, her voice, powerful. It's one of those songs. It's a bit like the mum song in Everyone's Talking About Jamie. it's a bit like the Mum Song in Dear Evan Hansen. And again, those two musicals are the, it's that kind of genre of musical, definitely. But yeah, and Gracie McGonagall plays Katie, his sort of love interest character. And Amy Trigg plays Agnes, who is in a wheelchair. So there's actors with disabilities, there's characters with disabilities. This is definitely an inclusive production. The set design is beautiful, by Colin Richmond. I last saw his work, I think, when I saw the Annie UK tour that had Sam Freeman in it. And the lighting design is fantastic, actually. It really does stand out. And that's Howard Hudson, and he did And Juliet.
Very nice. Good calibre of creatives there. And I think it's interesting, we talk not enough, I don't think, about the creatives. We talk a lot about actors and the performances and stuff, but ultimately it is a collaboration. Good theatre is a collaboration. And if there's an element that's missing or is not quite right, I think it falters the whole show. Like, you know, you said lighting is incredibly important. Sound is incredibly important. You know, those elements that enhance, they also become characters within themselves. They enhance the emotion, they enhance the action. You know, they help drive the narrative. Those things are so important. And as a producer myself, like bringing in my creative team, you know, it's actually one of the joyous parts of being a producer is selecting the team that's going to kind of like create this vision that you have with your director, your lighting, sound, you know, the movement coordinators, whatever else that comes into that mix. It is a collaboration. And I'm realizing that more and more as I'm progressing more in my career, especially with film, you know, film as well, moving from film into theater, it's actually been a really nice kind of transition of going back and forth and extending my skill set and also working with more and more people, which has been really cool. What I was going to say with the Soho Place Theatre, what's interesting is there is a versatile space, very similar to the Bridge Theatre, where you can have front on, in the round, you know, I'm sure they could do a promenade style there as well. We're yet to see what it's like in any other configuration. We've only ever seen that space now in the round. So I'm excited to see what happens next after this piece if they do change the configuration. Because it, as all new theatres should be, they need to be fully accessible. And what's interesting as well, I don't think anyone really realises how challenging it can be within society. Like even doing the mundane thing of going to the supermarket when you have a disability. My father at the minute's got a bad leg. He's in a wheelchair. He's on crutches, but he can't handle them so well. So when we go on for long like walks and stuff or whatever, he's in a wheelchair. And what's interesting, even the most straightforward thing is going from A to B was a challenge. And I never really realized it until I was helping my father in his chair. So it goes to show we need more of these kind of pieces, these productions, to help make people more aware about disabilities and the challenges and stuff. And also of the hope, you know, that it's not like 100 years ago, if you had a disability, there was very limited things you can do. Now you can, you know, live an absolutely extraordinary and healthy life. But you need that support, as you said. You know, you need your friends, your family. You need society to kind of give the helping hand. And as you said before as well, the old Victorian theatres, you know, they had to be obviously upgraded in somewhat so they can allow accessibility. But it's good that all the brand new spaces are fully accessible. So, yeah, it's wonderful. We need more shows like this, more shows that show a kind of diverse, if you like, storyline from all parts of society.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, you know, not just the accessibility, but I think just, you know, the attitude and the friendliness of staff as well. I did note at Soho Place Theatre that the staff were so incredibly friendly and helpful. And I could see that there was someone in a wheelchair and they went above and beyond to make sure that that person got, I was actually watching because I was interested. I was nosing, you know, whereas some of the staff ushers can, you know, that it's all part of the experience. I think from the minute you walk into the theatre to the minute you get to your seat, it should all be part of the experience. And sometimes, you know, it's a bit like, you know, when you go to a restaurant, sometimes you get a waiter who absolutely, you know, a waiter or waitress, you know, it's waiter, the term now for every pronoun. But I just think, you know, like sometimes your whole dinner experience can be enhanced by someone just being friendly and, you know, giving you that customer service. At the end of the day, you're paying money to have a meal. And it's the same. You paid a lot of money for your ticket and the whole experience should be great. It should go from door to stage and back again. And sometimes it can be a bit kind of shouty. On Broadway, it's really shouty. Oh, my goodness. In the interval...
Get to your seats. Come on, go, go, go.
No, in the interval at Hamilton, it's keep moving, keep moving. They're like shouting, your toilets to the left, ladies to the left, men to the right. They're literally shouting in your face. I was thinking, I'd quite like to buy a scarf. I was trying to head towards the merch and I was like, I just got washed in this sea of people. I ended up in the loo queue. I didn't even need to go. I felt like I must go. I felt like I was going to be, you know, like at gunpoint if I didn't, you know, join a particular queue. It was very, I mean, I understand it. There's loads of people, but there can't be any more people than there are in a theatre at the Palladium or, you know, one of our larger theatres. And we don't get yelled at there. It was just very, I don't know. The whole experience that's, Soho Place was wonderful.
And it's this champion, James Charlton. Now, James Charlton is the experience manager, as it were, of NIMAX Theatres that owns Soho Place. And it's his job to basically hire the best front of house team that he can and train them up so that they are... So it is a nice experience, as you say, from the moment you walk through the door, through the production, until the moment you leave. And I think that is incredibly important. I do think that on the whole, our theatres are run very, very well. I don't think I've ever really come across... Oh, no, I have come across the odd box office person. That's not the most friendly. But that's a story for another time. Box office is different. They're different.
Box office is different, isn't
breed.
It?
I think because they're stuck in a cupboard all day that they just get a bit like...
They're on the phones and they probably get a lot of stick from people. But yeah, a lot of our ushers are they're finding their feet through drama school, and it's a job that pays its way through drama school, that kind of thing, and straight after, in between jobs.
And, out of work actors and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So they generally you do get very enthusiastic people. I've bumped into many an ex pupil of mine that I've taught drama to, and they're ushering in between jobs or whatever. So yeah, on the whole, really good. But Soho Place, I just noticed that they were above and beyond. You know, there was just that extra level of care and attention, and yeah, just the staging of this show was great. Special effects, yeah, it felt like very much like Curious Incident vibes. But yeah, loved it. Some really catchy tunes, came out humming. Definitely recommend that. And that's going on till March the 2nd.
Moving on from lovely front of the house stuff to another theatre that I've been to only once, and for my first time was just a little while ago, to see High Society. Now, what I loved about the show, again, is the whole experience. It's at the Mill at Sonning, and it's a whole... It's a different experience. It's beautiful theatre, a wonderful theatre space, but it's the pre-dinner. You get an a la carte three-course meal. Like, it's wonderful, you know. It's set in an old barn. It's in the old mill, hence why it's called the Mill at Sonning, and it's spectacular. I again, the moment you walk through the door, everyone is so friendly, so happy to please you and stuff. The whole experience was amazing, to the point where I was literally exhausted from it. Like, you get absolutely, you smile. You know the food is gorgeous. You can eat to your heart's content. And then you sit there and you're watching a show, and then afterwards you can have a drink, entertain, whatever you want to do.
Oh, so it was a dinner theatre experience, like Mamma Mia, like Fawlty Towers?
No, not quite the same, because it's a dinner in the Mill, and then you go kind of through these doors into the theatre space. So you don't actually eat and see the show at the same time. It's a separate thing. So we did the matinee, because you know I like a matinee. So we did the lunch.
You love a matinee.
And because it was Christmas time, it was a Christmas lunch. And you know, as a vegetarian, they gave me wonderful options. So it's really good. Lovely roast potatoes. Gorgeous roast potatoes. I have to say, I do like a good roast potato. And
you do a good roast potato, actually.
I do very much so, a good roast potato. I'm helping cooking Christmas
it's
dinner.
It's up there in the top three.
Yeah, and a good cauliflower cheese as well. So I do love all that kind of stuff. So for those, do you know the story of high society? Are you familiar with it? Or
I feel like I do, but remind me.
Okay, well, it's based on the play The Philadelphia Story by Philip Barry. And also based on the motion picture film High Society. But it's a wonderful musical. It's a feel-good musical. It's a nice musical. It's a kind of a musical which it's just very pleasant to watch, you know? How can I say this? It's not going to challenge you. It's not like watching Dear Evan Hansen or, and as you said earlier, you know, the Jamie musical or Les Mis or anything like that. It's not that kind of musical. It's a nice story about a young couple that are about to get married, and you know, they're from a very wealthy family, and all the things that kind of go up and down, you know, right and wrong, and you know, whether or not she wants to go through with it, whether he wants to go through with it, and then there's a mistaken identity thing going on, and all sorts of stuff. So it's set in Long Island, and it's, you know, socialite Tracy Lord is planning her lavish high society nuptials. Okay, nuptials, isn't it? Nuptials.
Nuptials, darling.
Yes. And then, you know,
neutrals.
They got 700 guests. Can you imagine 700
wow.
guests? I mean,
no, I can't.
Does anyone actually know 700 people? I mean, goodness me. I mean,
well, we do on Facebook and whatnot, don't we, darling?
Well, actually, on Facebook, I've got 4,000 friends, but you know, I'd...
well, that's the thing, isn't it?
It's an amazing time at Christmas, sending cards and stuff.
Popular.
Yeah. So popular. In fact, you know what? In the new year, I might actually purge. I might do a purge.
Let's cull.
Or friends.
Let's do a New Year's Eve cull.
Shall we? Let's do that.
We could do it on Boxing Day. When I see you on Boxing Day, right? Do I know this person? Do we still speak? Have they ever responded? Goodbye. Good day.
Good day. Goodbye. Yes. I know. The play itself. Oh, the musical itself, the story, everything about it is really good. Like I said, it's definitely the right kind of show for the audience that goes to the Mill at Sonning. Even George Clooney is a punter. He lives literally next door to the theatre.
I just heard, did he pop in? Did you see him?
No, I didn't see him that day, but apparently he does pop in. He's a champion of the space.
We've seen quite a few wonderful people this year, have we not?
We have. Yes. Hadda Waddingham.
That would have topped it off after Joan Collins.
Yeah,
it?
Joan Collins, Hadda Waddingham.
Hadda Waddingham. Joan Collins.
Yes.
Dame Judi Dench.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Can I carry on with High Society, please?
Please do so.
Thank you very much. So, very much a Christmas show without being a Christmassy show. That kind of makes any sense at all. But again, you know, as I said, it was a wonderful piece for that space. A wonderful feel-good musical. It's not going to overly challenge you, but it was funny. There were some really cool songs. One of the famous songs is "Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?" Your turn.
I do.
Thank you. I got there eventually. But yeah, so that's one of the more famous songs. I want to champion the cast. Now, the cast were really strong. Like, there's a whole ensemble. You can see how they all get on really well. And the relationships between them all was really spot on. I mean, comedy moments by Kurt Kansley as Uncle Willy. Terrific moments there. The mistaken identity thing that they'd set up. Kedlow, I hope I got her name right, as Dina Lord. Very sweet, wonderful young actress. Wonderful moments. And Matthew Jeans as Mike Connor. You know, was he going to go with Tracy, or was he going to go with Liz? You know, like, where was this going to go to? Was Tracy going to marry George? Or Dexter, go back to Dexter. I mean, what was going on here and stuff? And not to spoil the ending, but I'm not going to say who she goes with in the end. But it was a really good piece, really worth seeing, really loved it. I'm really, really glad I got to see it. And again, championing up the creative team there. The direction was superb by Joe Pitcher, who's the director. Choreography was Jay Elster, who was one of my West End Bears choreographers back in the day. Set design, Jason Denver. Natty Titchener was the costume designer. Again, really cool costumes from the 1950s. It was really, really lovely. All the dresses and stuff, all the things flying around and stuff. And again, we said about lighting design in the previous play we talked about today. And that was Nick Farnham. Barman, sorry, who's actually worked on shows I've done before, so it's nice to see his work again. And then we got some wonderful sound design by Chris Wybrow. So it's one of those musicals that I'd like to actually go back and see the film and see how it plays out. I think it'd be obviously very similar to what they did on stage, but obviously different cast, different things, much bigger sets, that kind of stuff. But I have to go, going back to the actual, the meal itself, the theatre, it's a really beautiful space. And I'm very excited to go back and see some more stuff there, because you've got Calendar Girls coming up, which has got our very own Bashenka Blake. You know my friend Bashenka? You've met her a few times, haven't you?
Yeah.
So she's got to get her buns out, as it were, for that one. I know, right?
Wow. Exciting times.
The Bashenka's playing the Helen Mirren character, I believe. I don't know. And a famous line in that is, we're going to need bigger buns. So very interested to see how they do that.
I see.
Do you know Bedra Fars? The Alan Ayckbourn play.
I do.
Yeah, so that's going to be on later in the year as well.
Oh, lovely. And has it got the dinner?
Yes.
Do we do the dinner before? Yes. Oh, I'm doing it. I'm in.
Okay.
I want the roast potatoes.
Oof. Well, it might not be a roast that day. Yes. It might be something else. I don't know.
Can we find out in advance, maybe?
We're only going if there's roast potatoes.
Yes. I can only review the theatre.
If there's roast potatoes.
Positively.
That's it.
Yeah,
If you give us roast potatoes, you get a positive review.
Sorted.
If it's mashed potato, it's a nice.
I love mashed potato.
Do you?
Yeah, I actually prefer it.
Oh, no, not a fan. It's ever since
with
the lumpy days of
and
school.
And a Malbec and cream spinach, wilted, lovely. Mm.
Yeah, no, not for me. But yes. Anyway, the season ends next Christmas. I mean, God, we're thinking ahead to the end of 2024 already with White Christmas. White Christmas. So that could be quite nice. It's an interesting musical, that one.
Yeah, I saw that a couple of years back at the, what's the theatre?
Was it Dominion?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big, big house, the Dominion. Yeah. It needs to be
a
good show.
It's a big house to fill.
It is.
It is a big house to fill. I saw Prince of Egypt there and White Christmas, you know, just, I think Prince of Egypt was just a few months before COVID happened, I think. But, yeah, it's a huge, vast stage. It does need a big cast to fill it. And, yeah, I think White Christmas, when there's just a few people on stage, it's quite, feels a bit vacant, a bit empty. Maybe not the right theatre for it. It was a great show. It just needed to be somewhere like the Garrick, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, possibly.
Good, good. And then you went to the Katie Mitchell talk, lecture.
A talk, lecture, yes. So I'm very interested in the careers of certain directors in both film and theatre. And Katie Mitchell was giving a talk. Now, for those who don't know who she is a British theatre director whose unique style and uncompromising methods have divided both critics and audiences. Now, what I mean by that is she's very much one that gets the text and turns it on its head. For instance, she did a version of Hamlet where she cut 98% of the play. Now, it turned into a piece called Ophelia, and they did it at the Royal Court Theatre. And what was so wonderful, I mean, I never got to see it, but reading up about it and other people that I know have actually seen it, is that it was all from Ophelia's point of view. So the stage was Ophelia's bedroom, and as the play went on, water was rising, obviously because of the whole drowning aspect of it. And because it's all from Ophelia's point of view, you got to know where you were in the story of Hamlet by certain lines being shouted out from the sidelines, from like Hamlet or Polonius or whoever it might be. So you knew where you were with the story. So she does stuff like that. She's very prolific in Germany. And the main reason that there is because they allow her to just get on and do stuff. They don't like text to be as it is. They like it reconstructed, deconstructed, or, you know, all sorts of wonderful things. So, for instance, if she did a classic text in Germany and she used period costume, the critics would laugh at her. It's that kind of thing. You have to make things, not necessarily contemporary, but you've got to spin things around to make it all very alternate to how it would be. So that means that the critics in the UK, a little bit kind of not so generous with their reviews of her work because she does like to do things her way. She's very prolific in the opera scene, or at least she was. She's at the talk, she said she's not going to do opera again because she finds it too misogynistic and too controlling. And apparently there's only really 35 operas that are ever repeated and used. Technically 35, if you like, famous operas, which I've been produced for. I've got a long way to go to get to my at least 35 on that one. But she's certainly someone I'd like to work with. Very interesting career and a wonderful speaker. And her career has spanned a very long time. She's been going quite a while. She's got a lot of awards and stuff. She's got a lot to say about things. She likes to do stuff a little bit differently in a positive way, I think. There's certain directors that do things differently. And people like, I mean, Jamie Lloyd's redeemed himself in my eyes with Sunset Boulevard. I thought that production was incredible. But on a past one, like the play about the bird.
The Seagull.
Yeah. No.
I know.
No.
Yeah, but he did do a great Evita and, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar. You know, there were some great productions. His Serrano was incredible as well. It was just that Seagull that
just ruined it for
us. Didn't do it for us.
No, it didn't. Like, Ivar Van Hove, like, you know, I just think I just think it's too much. Like, you know, going back onto a Little Life, it was too long. I know the book is quite gruesome. It's too long. I don't need to see the self-harming stuff done 5 times on stage. You do it once, you get an idea. Ah, okay, I know what he's going to do next. You know, the projections, like, what are you doing? The story is strong enough as it is. You don't need to add all these different elements to it, you know. But there's other directors like Luke Shepherd. I'm really a big fan of Luke Shepherd. I'm very excited to see his version of Starlight Express when it opens in London later next year.
Oh, I cannot wait for that. That is my cannot wait for next year. Loved it when I was 7 years old.
Going back to the Soho Place, he directed the Little Big Things. The Da Vinci Code, we saw our friend Bashenka in. Yeah, and Juliet, of course.
You know that
In the Heights. Yeah. You know, his career is really progressing really, really well. It's a wonderful start.
Taken off.
Absolutely. Yeah, like people like Rupert Gould, who I really adore, you know, as the artistic director of the Almeida Theatre. You know, he's really championed some terrific works. And obviously, right now we've got... He's obviously doing some stuff at the National Theatre as well. He could possibly become the AD in the future of the National Theatre. Who knows? I mean, he'd be a great candidate for it. The Witches, which is on now.
Yeah.
At the National Theatre.
I'm seeing that in January. I cannot wait. I'm taking 186 people to see The Witches at the National.
You mean students. You mean children, not people. Little ones.
Well, 186 people, because I was including students and teachers. So, you know, there's a big contingent of teachers coming with, obviously, to accompany on our 1-10 ratio. Oof. But so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, Sam Mendes at the moment, I mean, on the next episode, we'll talk about The Motive and the Cue, which I saw this week and which you'll be seeing shortly. And I mean, he for me has always been an incredible director, and The Motive and the Cue, just sublime. But we'll talk about that in more detail. But for me, one of my favourite directors is Emma Rice and Wise Children. I mean, I champion Wise Children. I just love their storytelling and the use of music and comedy. And like, just always so uplifting, even when there's sort of dark moments of humanity. And there's always this uplift through there. And just, she has a beautiful, wistful, otherworldly, enchanting way of presenting story, and I love that, and I will always go and see anything Emma Rice.
Anything Emma Rice. Okay, that's cool. I mean, there are so many. We are blessed with some incredible directors in the UK, in London specifically. You know, we've got a wonderful array of younger directors coming through and older directors still working, which is really cool. But just going back again to Sam Mendes, you know, the Layman trilogy, how brilliant is that show? You know, like, we are very, very blessed for that one. But moving on from directors into something we've seen now, you've seen it twice, Guys and Dolls.
I know. Do you know what? There's a couple of shows that this year, you know, like having seen Dear England again, literally yesterday. And so, there's so many good plays that just 2 months later, you're quite happy to go and watch again. And the Guys and Dolls, I saw that again. But instead of sitting up on the circle or the balcony, I'm not sure what it's called at the bridge, went to do it as a promenade, and that was fantastic. Yeah, it was lovely to move around with the action and the actors, which is incredible. And you know, I always love what they did when I saw that Midsummer Night's Dream a few years back now. But it does make a difference being immersed in the action and being on the ground and moving around. And I think actually, because I had insight into where the different scenes were happening, and obviously because I've directed Guys and Dolls before, so I know the musical inside out, I was able to kind of maneuver my colleague around, because I knew exactly where the best place to stand would be, to ensure that we had the absolute best upfront view of everything that was going on. And I have to thank the school trip once again, and a happy Christmas to them for giving me the tickets, because it was a wonderful experience and lovely for my colleague to experience it, because she hadn't yet seen the show. But yeah, it's a very different experience. It's, as we talked earlier on in the episode, about that synthesis between the creatives, so the lighting designer, the costumes, the set designer, and the, you know, the band, the musicians, the musical theatre team, that whole side of it. But in this particular theatre, the crew, I mean, let's just appreciate the incredible work they have to do with a promenade performance, particularly with all the logistics of the hydraulics and the stages and the things that move in and out, and the safety of the audience and manoeuvring them. And at times they have to be quite forceful to ensure that you move out of the way because this is coming through or that's coming through. But the audience are really, you know, receptive to that, because I imagine for some people, they've never been to an experience like a promenade piece of theatre before. And they have to work incredibly hard. And, you know, you're working with people and audience members who can be unpredictable, and people with, you know, accessibility, you know, problems. And therefore that can be a challenge in itself as well. But really, really incredible. And I'm glad I had the opportunity to experience it as promenade. So if anyone's going to see Guys and Dolls, do book the promenade tickets without a shadow of a doubt. It's a great experience when you're seated, but it is even better and more sublime if you are promenading.
Absolutely. No, I agree. And that's why I wanted to do that myself when I went to see. I won't see the seated version. If I go again, it would be, again, the same thing. And also, you're standing up, obviously, but you're not standing for a long time because you're being moved around a lot and stuff. So you're, you know, you're part of the action, as it were. And as you said, you know, to speak up to the supporting cast, as it were, because even like the people that are running the crowd control stuff, they're all in character. So they're the policemen or they're the services.
Yeah, they're dressed as police officers and things, or hot dog stall owners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they're moving you around. So it works really, really well. And that's currently booking until August next year.
Is it really?
So it's a long-running show for The Bridge. Yeah, yeah. It's a long-running show for The Bridge. And it's interesting because The Bridge was kind of set up, or at least how it started, as having short-run new pieces and reworked shows. So it's interesting they've now got this obviously very successful show and they're just keeping it going, which is good and bad. It's good for them in the sense that they're going to, you know, they're selling well on a show that's incredibly successful. But then as a regular theatre goer, you kind of want to see new works all the time. You know, as someone like us who sees theatre quite regularly, it means that we're not going to go back to The Bridge maybe once or twice a year.
Yeah.
Where we'd go every couple of months previously because we're seeing all the new shows.
Yeah. Do you know what they could do with? They could do with, there's a lot of land around there. I'm not advocating that we cover every piece of land, but they could almost do with a small black box studio theatre, you know, a bit like the Trafalgar upstairs that used to exist, something like that, that they could double up as a rehearsal room that could be a little studio where new work is being shown alongside this big, successful, amazing, long-running show that I'm glad they're keeping running, because I think for young people today, this is a great one for directors of drama, heads of drama, to take students to really see how exciting theatre can be and what is possible and what makes it magical. But that
yeah,
would be
absolutely
nice.
Well, I think that's about it for today, isn't it?
Yeah, Dale? We need to go eat some mince pies and wrap presents. like I haven't done that already, darling. All done.
All done. Okay. Well, I can't wait to give you your present.
Oh.
Oh.
Well, charming. I've got you a present too, so that's great. I shall look forward to handing that over to you on Boxing Day. Very much excited for the murder mystery Christmas dress-up special. I love the character that you've given me. I'm looking forward to getting into character as Gilda Bell.
I mean, to be fair, although I wrote a lot of the scripts, I didn't create the names. They come already. But I did tweak stuff here and there. But yeah, you know, if I'm going to do a dinner at Christmas, I need to do a theatrical experience. Otherwise, what's the point?
Absolutely. I am so excited for the murder mystery. And I am so excited for my character. So I am very much looking forward to our Boxing Day evening extravaganza.
Excellent. Okay. Well, until then.
Until then.
Why not grab a ticket to one of the shows mentioned in this podcast? Tune in next time and recommend us to your friends and family.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. Until the next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.